Transylvania University Department of Theater presents the epic conclusion of Carmilla, a vampirous radio play adapted by Ali Amade, original story by J. Sheridan LaFanu.
Dreaming, my dear.
Carmilla, you haunt my dreams now.
We are connected now. Nothing can separate us.
Do you think that you will ever confide fully in me?
I am under vows. No nun hath so awfully. The time is very near when you shall know everything.
You won't answer that. Even in my dreams, you remain elusive. Why must you vex me so?
You will think me cruel. Very selfish, but love is always selfish. You must come with me, loving me to death, or else hate me and still come with me, and hating me through death and after.
More riddles. Can't you tell me anything? Tell me of your first ball. You are not so old. Your first dance can hardly be forgotten.
I remember everything with an effort. I see it all as a diver sees what is going on above him, through a viscous, dense, rippling medium, but still transparent.
Tell me. Show me.
Her name was Mircalla, the Countess of Karnstein. Her first dance was the day of her wedding, but what happened that night confuses the picture and made its colors faint.
Mircalla? Like the woman in the painting.
She was all but assassinated in her bed, and never was the same since.
Assassinated?
Yes. A cruel love. Strange love. Love will have its sacrifices. No sacrifice without blood. That is what he said to her.
Who said?
Her new husband, a Moravian nobleman, the Baron Vordingborg.
Come to bed, Mircalla, my wife.
No.
You think you have a choice, pretty bird. This is your new cage.
You were drunk.
You dare to threaten me? What are you going to do with that knife?
Don't touch me.
You will sing for me, pretty bird.
I'd rather die by my own hand.
You... killed yourself.
I freed myself.
No! Mircalla!
How does it begin, and how does it multiply itself? I will tell you. A person, more or less wicked, puts an end to herself. A suicide, under certain circumstances, becomes a new power. This happened in the case of the beautiful Mircalla, Countess of Karnstein. But that was not the end of her story.
She is dead! She is dead! Matska, come help! You were dead. A natural.
No. I am free.
Upa! Upa!
But that revenge was not the end. For it is the nature of vampires to increase and multiply.
My lady! I heard screams.
My faithful Matska, I have a present for you.
You made Matska like you.
The specters then plagued the villagers, killing their families one by one. But the peasant scum joined forces to fight.
Death to you, fire!
Down with the Karnsteins!
In the end, Only one peasant remained to tell the story of the accursed Karnsteins to future generations. And the Upires, welcome in neither heaven nor hell, roam the world without rest or relief for their hunger.
Miss Lauda, what is the matter? Another nightmare?
I dreamt of the Countess of Karnstein.
From the painting?
Yes, I think she may have killed herself.
But why?
She was forced to marry a man she did not love. I think I might do the same in her shoes.
Oh, now don't you go saying things like that. God does not smile kindly on those who take their own lives. Oh, now, I don't mean to go preaching to you. I don't want you giving in to your misguided romantic notions, Miss Lauda, and end up buried in the sinner's plot alongside your Juliet and Romeo. Look at how flushed you are, my dear. Must have been quite a dream.
Yes, it was very vivid.
I never remember my dreams, not even the naughty bits. I'm impressed you've remembered all that. And who was the unfortunate groom?
The Baron Vordenborg.
Tell me more about this Baron character. Did he have a mustache? Was he holding a sheep? Or maybe the sheep had the mustache and the Baron was holding his sword.
See, I knew you would just laugh at my story, and I can't bear its being treated as a jest. I feel very sad for the Countess, if my dream be true at all. Perhaps it was the only way she could see to be free. Oh, I have an unexplainable panic about being left alone today. I know it is not rational. I feel like a child, afraid of the dark corners of her room.
Don't worry, miss. I will keep the beasts at the gate tonight.
Please, don't tell Father about my dream. He and the doctor will have me shipped off to a sanatorium.
Come now. I would not let them.
They already fancy that I've been attacked by the mysterious complaint which has invaded our neighborhood.
Hello there, good mountebank.
Hello, ladies. I come bearing flowers from the field for our fair invalid.
Martin, you've come bearing weeds.
One cannot dispute their restorative powers.
Thank you, kind sir. Amuse me, good mountebank, with a story.
A story? Let me see. What kind?
Tell me about love and death. Both have been on my mind.
Both are tied together. You are very wise, my young friend, and I am reminded of an old Romany story of a pretty young girl with no husband nor kinsfolk. They were all dead and gone. She lived alone in a hut at the end of the village. One evening, a goodly wanderer came to her, opened the door and cried,
I am a wanderer and have been far in the world. Here will I rest. I can no further go.
Stay here, she told him. I will give thee a mattress to sleep on. He said,
It is long since I slept last.
How long? She said.
Dear maid, I sleep but 1 week in 1,000 years.
A roguish fellow. I've heard that one before. Pardon me.
Early next morning, he arose and said,
Thou art a pretty young girl. If thou wilt, I will tarry here a while longer.
She gladly agreed, for already she loved the wanderer. So while they were sleeping, she roused him and said, Dear man, I dreamt such an evil dream. I dreamt thou hadst grown cold and white. Thou didst blow on a mighty horn. Then dead folk came up and went with us. Thou wert their king.
That was an evil dream indeed, he said.
And straightway he rose.
Beloved, I must off. Let me go.
In tears she cried, Go not away, bide with me. But he continued to leave.
I must go, for whilst I've been with you, not a soul has died in all the world.
She stood in his way and pleased, Tell me, dear man, who thou art. He shook his head and said,
All who knows dies. I tell thee not who I am.
Then the girl wept and said, I will suffer everything. Only do tell me who thou art. He smiled, drew her into his arms, and said,
Good, then thou comest with me, for I am Death.
Death was her sweetheart.
Aye, the girl shuddered and died in his embrace.
That was a horrible story, Martin.
Oh, no, I thought it quite lovely. Sad, but lovely.
By the by, Miss Laura, did you also know that the long lime tree walk behind your bedroom window is haunted?
Nonsense. I will have you kicked right out if you continue on with your superstitions.
I have come up twice when the old yard gate was being repaired, before sunrise, and twice saw the same figure walking down the lime tree avenue.
So well you might, as long as there are cows to milk in the river fields and wine in the skins round your neck.
Where the figure walks, the fog follows, the trees shy away, and even the owls, the mighty hunters of the night, silence their calls.
Oh, dear Martin, are you truly frightened?
Never did I see a fool more frightened.
You must not say a word about it to Carmilla, because she can see down that walk from her room, and she is, if possible, a greater coward than I.
Miss Lauda, don't you remember? Miss Carmilla has gone.
Oh, yes. I almost forgot. And the painter has drowned. Maybe he is the ghostly figure walking the path. Is his soul cursed now, Madame Perrodon?
No, no, my dear. Don't you think on it. It was an accident.
And now I am sick and will soon die from this plague.
Oh, no, miss, don't even think that.
I'm sorry to worry everyone. I'm afraid my nerves are quite exposed today.
It's all right, Miss Laura. You've had quite a shock.
I am quite sure it was all fancy. Perhaps your dreams will be sweeter tonight as well.
I used to think that evil spirits made dreams, but our doctor told me it is no such thing.
It is only a fever passing by, or some other malady, as they often do. They knock at the door, and not being able to get in, pass on. You shall see.
Why don't you rest again, my dear?
Perrodon, Martin, come in.
How is Laura? Any better?
She seems a changed girl, Doctor.
Yesterday she slept profoundly, but is troubled greatly today.
Yes, then this morning she spoke of a languor weighing upon her.
A strange melancholy has stolen over her. All of us as well. A melancholy that she won't have interrupted despite all our efforts to make her better or cheer her up.
It has only been in this last day that her sufferings have told upon her appearance. She has grown more pale, her eyes dilated and darkened underneath.
Blast it! I feel so damn helpless. Must I sit back and watch my dear girl fade away? Like the general's niece? The ranger's Yana?
Calm yourself, my friend. Though dim thoughts of death begin to open, do not let your soul acquiesce in it. Without knowing it, Laura is now in an advanced stage of the strangest illness under which mortal ever suffered. Triggered by the attack, it's waging both a mental and physical assault on her. She has described to me certain vague and strange sensations visiting her in sleep. The prevailing one was that pleasant, peculiar cold thrill which one feels in bathing when we move against the current of a river. Then dreams that seemed eternal, leaving an awful impression, a sense of exhaustion, and upon waking, a remembrance of having been in a dark place. And of having spoken to people whom she could not see, and especially of one clear voice, of a female's, very deep, that spoke as if at a distance, slowly, and producing always the same sensation of indescribable solemnity and fear.
Carmilla, she keeps shouting her name in her sleep, yet she cannot remember the attack itself, nor that Carmilla has vanished.
With an obstinacy which now seems to me unaccountable, she persists in assuring me that she is quite well.
In a sense, this is true. Laura claims she has no pain, despite the gruesome wound left by the beast on her neck. The complaint seems mainly to be one of the imagination, or the nerves, and horrible as her sufferings are, she keeps them with a morbid reserve very nearly to herself.
It could not be that terrible complaint which the peasants called the upar.
Of course not. Laura, my dear, you're awake.
Have you found Carmilla?
I'm afraid not, my dear. We called out her name over every inch of the chateau and grounds, but there's still no reply.
I swear, if she has concealed herself to play a cruel trick on us, she had better come out and to end our anxieties.
I am utterly puzzled. What will I tell the poor girl's mother when she arrives?
If she arrives, that is.
What do you mean, if?
I think we might be pawns in a larger conspiracy here.
Though we may be perplexed at the present, a little time will, no doubt, explain all. I hate to think what this is doing to your health, my dear child.
You should go back to bed and rest, Laura.
That must be the ranger. Come in, André. What news?
Sir, every part of the chateau has been searched and the woods explored. No trace of the missing lady has been discovered. The whole hysteria seems to be a state of agitation this morning.
Perhaps Miss Carmilla is a sleepwalker? She might have got up in the night and walked away.
Let us pray all these mysteries be so easily and innocently explained.
I found signs of a fierce struggle where your daughter was found. I followed the trail into the woods, but the tracks just vanished.
Ranger, should we drag the pond?
With all due respect, sir, this is not a beast that fears the water.
I refuse to believe these fairy stories.
Not all the stories we tell are to wrest change from nobles.
This creature is real and will kill again if we do not stop it. More will die. Your daughter will die, just like my Yana.
Your ranger is right. The time has come. I'm afraid Lauda's condition is getting worse. We must act now. Peridon, prepare Miss Lauda for the procedure.
What?
We have a plan. You will not like it, old friend, but we must flush this beast out.
And put an end to it.
She is ready for you now, doctor.
You plan to bleed her?
Laura, dear, this might sting for a moment. Peridon, please hold the reservoir.
I dare say, doctor, you are going to tell me that I am an old fool for having brought you here again. I hope I am.
Don't exert yourself, dear. Just relax for a moment.
I wish my poor Laura was looking more like herself.
There. That seems like enough to balance the humors. Now here is a bandage. Hold it like this. Madame, give the reservoir to the ranger.
What?
The ranger and Martin will use the blood to set the trap.
At once, sir.
What are you doing?
All in good time, old friend.
Laura, my dear, attend to the doctor.
Yes?
Laura, I need you to recollect yourself. You mentioned a sensation like that of two needles piercing the skin, somewhere about your neck on the night of your attack. Is there still any soreness?
None at all.
Do you remember anything about that evening?
I remember the moon and Carmilla, but then it all becomes strange and muddled.
Laura, you won't mind your papa's lowering your robe a very little. It is necessary to detect a symptom of the complaint under which you have been suffering.
God bless me. That wound.
You see it now with your own eyes. Though things seem strange, it is imperative to her recovery that we act without hesitation and in spite of rational thought. Can you do that?
I trust you and will do all that you ask.
Sir, a man on horseback just arrived with these.
This letter had been delayed. It's from General Spalsdorf. Seems he will be here shortly.
This is good fortune indeed. I will ride out now to meet him. You bring Laura to the old ruins this afternoon.
What? Is it safe?
You must do as I say in this. I will see you at the ruins.
What is it, Father?
General is coming.
Yet you do not look pleased. On the contrary, you look as if you wish him at the bottom of the Red Sea. Plainly, there is something on your mind which you do not choose to divulge.
Never mind me, Laura. You just do as Madame and the doctor tell you.
Papa, darling, will you tell me this? Does the doctor think me very ill?
Yes, dear. He thinks if the right steps are taken, you'll be quite well again. At least, on the high road to a complete recovery in a day or two. And I wish our good friend the General had chosen any other time. That is, I wish you had been perfectly well to receive him.
But do tell me, Papa, what does he think is the matter with me?
Nothing. You must not plague me with questions. I am sorry, my dear. I am only worried for your health and for your lost friend. You shall know all about it in a day or two. That is, all that I know. In the meantime, you are not to trouble your head about it. When you've recovered from your treatment a little, we'll be going to search the Karnstein ruins. The doctor thinks some fresh air will be good for you. Madame Peridon, order the carriage to be ready at 12.
I had wanted to take Carmilla there. She was most curious about the Karnsteins.
Well, maybe we will stumble upon her there, tiptoeing among the old graveyard in her nightdress like a lost Ophelia.
I pray you are right, Papa.
You'll have a lovely time in the shadows of the ruined castle. You will see, my dear, all this darkness will be chased away. This is the place. Laura, rest here a while.
Wrap yourself in this shawl to keep out the cold. The moon and stars will be out soon.
My dear General Sparsdorf. Good lord, man.
I know. My countenance is quite altered. My bravement, sustained in the death of my beloved niece and ward, has strangled my body and soul.
General?
Yes, my dear. It is the General, come for a visit.
What brings you here?
I encountered the good doctor on the road. He told me you'd be here at the ruins of Castle Karnstein. A fortunate coincidence, for I was going to ask you to bring me here.
I hope you are still thinking of claiming the titles and estates.
Something very different, I'm afraid. There is a ruined chapel, isn't there? With a great many tombs of that extinct family.
So there are. Highly interesting.
I mean to unearth some of the inhabitants.
Unearth who?
I have strange things to tell you, my dear friend. Such as I myself would have scouted as incredible a few months since.
Calm yourself and tell us what happened, man.
I should tell you with all pleasure, but you would not believe me.
Why should I not?
Because you believe in nothing but what is consistent with your own prejudices and illusions. I remember when I was like you, but I have learned better.
Try me. I am not such a dogmatist as you suppose. Besides which, I very well know that you generally require proof. What would you believe? And am therefore very strongly predisposed to respect your conclusions.
You are right in supposing that I have not been led lightly into a belief in the marvelous. For what I have experienced is marvelous. I have learned a great deal since I last saw you. A great deal that will astonish you. You knew my dear ward, my child, I may call her. No creature could have been more beautiful, and only 3 months ago, none more blooming.
Yes, poor thing. I know what a blow it was to you.
We have been very old friends, and I knew you would feel for me, childless as I am. She had become an object of very near interest to me, my whole world, and she repaid my care and affection that cheered my home and made my life happy. I sometimes wondered if there would be enough room in my heart for another, but that is all gone. My heart is hollow now. The years that remain to me on earth may not be very long, but by God's mercy, I hope to accomplish a service to mankind before I die and to unleash the vengeance of heaven upon the fiends who have murdered my poor child in the spring of her hopes and beauty.
Please, relate everything as it occurred. I assure you, it is not mere curiosity that prompts me.
My dear child was looking forward to visiting your charming daughter. In the meantime, we had an invitation to attend a ball from my old friend at the Count Karsfeld, whose estate is about 6 leagues to the other side of Karnstein. You remember his events.
Yes, and very splendid.
Oh, my God, lovely! Oh,
so... Oh, my goodness!
The night from which my sorrow dates was devoted to a magnificent masquerade. The grounds were thrown open to the dancers. The trees hung with colored lamps. There was such a display of fireworks as Paris itself had never witnessed. And such music. Music, you know, is my weakness. Such ravishing music. I felt myself carried back into the romance and poetry of my early youth. A masked ball, you know, is a beautiful sight, but so brilliant a spectacle of the kind I never saw before.
It is a very aristocratic assembly, Uncle. I think myself almost the only nobody present.
Nonsense, my dear Berta. You are looking quite beautiful this evening.
I feel foolish. I am the only one who wears no mask.
Nonsense again. A face exhibiting your excitement and unspeakable charm is always lovely and should not be concealed by a mask.
Look at that remarkable young lady and her party, dressed magnificently and much more worthy of your high praise, dear uncle.
Indeed, they are a most striking trio. There is something familiar about the woman.
Oh, they are coming this way.
General Spilesdorf, how lovely to meet you again. I have not seen you since Twelfth Night at the Stubenrath Palace. Or was it that scandalous soiree thrown by Carl Philip?
My good lady, I am afraid you have me at a disadvantage, for you are availing yourself the privilege of your mask, and I am left only with my curiosity piqued.
You may not remember me, but I could never forget. Count Wilhelm challenged you to a duel, but you calmed him with a half a bottle of Russian vodka and a French parlor maid instead.
Madame, your memory of the evening is much clearer than mine.
Malarca, come meet a very old acquaintance of mine. General, meet my daughter and her uncle, Matska.
A pleasure. Your daughter is every bit as beautiful and mysterious as her mother. Please, allow me to introduce you to my niece, Berta Ranfeld.
And what a treasure she is. I have been unable to take my eyes off of her from the moment she stepped into the room.
You are too free with your compliments, Milarka.
Her shyness is even more enduring than her sweet smile. Mama, was I not just telling you that the girl in white was the most beautiful girl in the room?
That you did. Yes, which is why, despite my better judgment, I have risked my safety to introduce these two girls to each other.
I simply had to make your acquaintance. I feel as though it is destiny that we should be friends, and I wonder if you feel as strangely drawn to me as I do to you. I have never had a friend. Should I find one now?
And how can we be friends when I have not even seen your face yet?
Very well. Here I am, unmasked.
I never saw anyone more taken with another at first sight than these two girls. They seem quite to have lost their hearts to each other.
Won't you now consent to stand on equal terms and do me the kindness to remove your mask as your daughter has?
Can any request be more unreasonable? Ask a lady to yield an advantage. Besides, how do you know you should recognize me? Years make changes.
As you see with me. Besides, it is vain trying to make yourself out as an old woman. Your figure betrays you.
Years, nevertheless, have passed since I saw you. Rather, since you saw me, for that is what I'm considering. If Malarca there is my daughter, then I cannot then be young, even in the opinion of people whom time has taught to be indulgent. And I may not like to be compared with what you remember of me. Since you have no mask to remove, you can offer me nothing in exchange.
You puzzle me greatly.
You shall know me, but not at present. We are older and better friends than perhaps you suspect. I cannot yet declare myself.
Madame la Comtesse, I'm afraid our carriage is at the door. A most urgent message has arrived. We must obey at once.
Then we are to lose you? But I hope for only a few hours.
It may be that only, or it may be a few weeks. It is very unlucky. Do you now know me?
I assure you I do not.
Mother, what is ever the matter?
This moment a piece of news has reached us like a thunderbolt. I'm afraid we must set out now and travel by a devious route, nearly 100 miles.
My perplexities multiply.
But mother, I have not yet recovered my strength. You see, dear Berta, my horse fell with me at a hunt which I had ridden out to witness, and my nerves have not yet recovered the shock.
The physician says that she must on no account exert herself for some time to come.
Dear General, my mother's pride will prevent her from making a very singular request of you.
Please, tell me how I may be of assistance.
We came here, in consequence, by very easy stages. hardly 6 leagues a day.
And now we must travel day and night on a mission of life and death.
Dear uncle, won't you invite my new friend to stay with us a while?
Oh, how can I refuse these two lovely ladies? Then the masked woman and her escort were gone. That day, Millarca came home with us, and I had secured so charming a companion for my dear girl. There soon, however, appeared some drawbacks. Millarca complained of extreme languor, and she never emerged from her room until the late afternoon. It was accidentally discovered that although she always locked her door on the inside, that she was sometimes absent from her room. She was repeatedly seen from the windows of the Schloss in the first faint gray of the morning, walking through the trees and looking like a person in a trance. How did you pass out from her room, leaving the door locked on the inside? In the midst of my perplexities, an anxiety of a far more urgent kind presented itself. My dear child began to lose her looks and health, and that in a manner so mysterious and even horrible that I became thoroughly frightened.
Did she have dreams?
Yes, appalling dreams of a specter, sometimes resembling Millarca, sometimes in the shape of a beast, indistinctly seen, walking around the foot of her bed from side to side. Then came sensations, one not unpleasant, but very peculiar, she said, resembling the flow of an icy stream against her breast. Then I came here to borrow the Dr. Hesselius, only to return during the assault which extinguished the last spark of vitality. The doctor told me he could not be mistaken. No natural disease exhibited the same symptoms.
What did you see?
I can't describe to you all that passed on that horrible night, only that the specter, Millarca, was gone and her victim dead in my arms.
Millarca, the girl killed your
She
Bertha?
Is not a girl, but rather a beast, transfigured and unholy.
Though this be madness, yet there is method in it.
And so I came here to the once palatial residence of the Karnsteins. It was a bad family, and here its blood-stained annals were written. It is hard that they should, after death, continue to plague the human race with their atrocious lusts. On to the dark business at hand, I need your ranger.
He is on his way here.
These rustics preserve the local traditions and tales of great families, whose stories die out among the rich and titled so soon as the families themselves become extinct. I am hoping he can point out the tomb of the Countess of Karnstein.
We have a portrait at home of Mircalla, the Countess Karnstein. Should you like to see it?
Time enough, dear girl. I believe I have seen the original.
She has been dead more than 2 centuries.
Not so dead as you fancied.
I confess, General. I fear you have gone mad. That everyone has gone mad.
That remains to me but one object which interests me during the few years that remain to me on Earth, and that is the wreck on her, the vengeance which I thank God may be still accomplished by a mortal arm.
What vengeance can you mean?
I mean to decapitate the monster.
What?
To strike her head off.
Cut her head off?
Aye, with a hatchet, with a spade, or with anything that can cleave through her murderous throat! Ah, here they are now. Ranger, have you been long employed about this forest?
I have been a woodman here under the forester all my days. So has my father before me and so on, as many generations as I can count. I could show you the very house in the ruined village here in which my ancestors lived.
How came the village to be deserted?
It was troubled by revenants, sir.
Go on, man.
Several were tracked to their graves. They are detected by the usual tests and extinguished in the usual ways, by decapitation, by the stake, and by burning. But not until many of the villagers were killed, so many graves opened, and so many upaya deprived of their horrible animation. The village was still not relieved, for one crypt remained undetected, that of the tomb of Mircalla, Countess of Karnstein, located inside of the castle. Their rank and wealth kept them safe for a time. But when enough of the young girls from the village were taken, the peasants finally rebelled and expelled the fiends from our rightful lands forever.
Can you point out where that crypt might have stood?
Not a soul living could tell you that now. Its location was a secret, even to her own husband. It could be anywhere on these grounds, under our very noses. They say her body was removed, or that the body removed itself, but no one is sure of that either.
I must find this creature, for both the doctor and I believe that the fiend of Karnstein has returned to her ancestral homeland. And I mean to send her to her final resting place tonight.
Then you and I have the same enemy and goal.
I have often thought the doctor should be consigned to a madhouse as of late, but I now fear that we're all inmates already.
Where all accustomed means have failed, people will rush into quackeries when the life of a beloved object is at stake.
If we're to save Laura, then we need to kill the root of all this evil.
Say it. It is Carmilla, isn't it? Milarka is Mircala, is Carmilla. They are all the same girl. They're all the same murderess.
Laura, calm yourself. It's all right.
No, Laura is right. You must help us find her, Laura.
What?
You will lead us to her, or you will die as well.
Now that is quite enough.
You've gone too far. I believe that if we kill the source of this pestilence, then we can save your daughter.
I don't have to stand here and listen to this utter nonsense.
Would you rather see her cold into the ground as I saw my child?
Laura, where are you going?
She has slipped into the crack in the ruined wall.
We must follow her.
It is too small for men to pass.
Find another way in, quickly.
Answered my call.
Carmilla? I hardly recognize you.
I am so glad to see you unharmed, my dear. Your blood, it was all over the woods, and I feared the worst. But then here you are, an answer to my prayers. Come to me. I have waited for you to be alone, my love.
Love? Do you even know what that is?
Yes. For the first time I understand it. It is you.
You are a monster. You have done nothing but lie to me.
Don't listen to what they say.
Because they speak the truth? You killed Bertha.
Yes.
And how many others?
Countless others.
You took my mother?
She came willingly.
And now me. I am dying. You have poisoned my body and wounded my heart.
No, no, dear one. It is different now. I can save you. You just need to drink from me. Then we can be together forever. You can be free from them. Just come here, drink from my wrist, and come with me forever.
No!
You have poisoned me as well, with your tenderness. Your love has changed me, made me feel again for the first time. I cannot go on without you.
I see thee so low as one dead in the bottom of a tomb.
But I love you, dear one. Please, you must come, Laura. There is no other way. You will die if you don't.
I will die either way.
Very well. Then everyone will die. They are coming. I must go.
Miss Laura, why did you run away? Are you all right?
Where is your Carmilla?
I don't know.
Carmilla, where is she?
I don't know.
You stepped into her devil's snare as well and are in league with the beast, aren't you? Aren't you?
Ah!
General! Keep your hands off of her.
Aye, there is Milarka. That is the same person who long ago was called Mircala, Countess Karnstein. Arm yourselves!
What are you doing?
Depart from this accursed ground, child. Be gone. May you never behold Carmilla more.
I am not leaving.
We must put this rabbit beast down now, before she kills again.
No!
Sparsdorf! That is enough. Tomorrow the commissioner will be called and the Inquisition will be held according to law.
No, there is no time to spare and only righteous justice to be served. The fiend must be destroyed. This night, I will deliver the region from a plague that has scourged its inhabitants for more than a century. The horrible enemy, thank God, is at last stripped.
You're no match for me.
Oh, my arm.
Let me go. No, Peridol.
Carmilla, please. Stop this violence!
It is you who have attacked me. You will all pay.
Father! You killed him, you monster!
They must all die so that we may go on forever together.
I cannot be with you.
Now, Ranger, drive her back into the crypt.
Quick, General, we have a trap. Use the sword.
Strike off her head. It is the only way.
It is done. The beast is no more. Carmilla?
She is gone, child. It is over.
Build a fire and burn all of the bodies. Throw the ashes in the river. Leave no trace of this horror.
Here we are now, in the following spring. My husband, the General Spalsdorf, has taken me on tour through Italy. We remained away for more than a year, and never spoke of recent events.
Come to bed now, Lara.
I am the butterfly, pinned through the breast.
If you won't come, wife, then bring me more wine.
My days and nights are dreadful. The solitude is insupportably terrific. There is no deliverance from the shadow of this unspeakable terror. The phantasmagoria surrounded by darkness.
Who's there? Who comes into my bedchamber?
Uncle, it is your obedient niece, come to give you a good night kiss.
Berta? My sweet Berta? It is a miracle!
And to this hour, the image of Carmilla returns to my memory. Sometimes the playful, languid, beautiful girl. Sometimes the writhing fiend I saw in the ruined church. And often, from a reverie I have started, fancying I heard the light step of Carmilla at the drawing room door.
No, sweet child. It is your mother and Berta. We have come to take care of you.
We bring you freedom.
Will you join us? Forever, my child. Will you drink?
Violent delights have violent ends, like fire and powder, which as they kiss, consume. Yes, I will.
Thank you.